Okay, so I was like scrolling through Instagram the other day, as one does.
Yes.
And I came across like one of those, can we call it a meme? Like, I don't know. But have you seen these on social media? It'll be like a list of things and it'll be like, you can only choose two. Or like, you can only have one of these two things for the rest of your life, like kind of things. The one that stuck out to me that I was like, would I want that? Would I not want that? And I felt like you and I might feel differently about this.
Probably.
So I was like, we should talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things of like this list of like 8 or 9 things, and it was like, you can only choose two for life. One of them was retiring at 35.
Oh.
Would you want to do that?
I think so.
Yeah, I thought that
I would still
do
creative work,
yeah.
But I would like not have any pressure about it.
I like worry that if I retired that young, it would be like really easy to be like a little bit of like a recluse or like lethargic. And I think like there's something to it, because if you say like retiring at 35, like does that mean all of a sudden I'm like really independently wealthy and like flying to Europe every weekend because I feel like it? Or because like that's different than just like, oh, I can afford the life I have now, but I'm like retired.
Mm-hmm.
And so like those are kind of different fantasy lands.
That's
but, like,
true.
I really worry like either way that there would be a lot of cons to like retiring at 35.
Oh, absolutely. It would totally affect your growth and like the trajectory of your life, because you'd have to be so much more in charge of like your own development. Because I feel like having even a work environment where you have to deal with coworkers kind of keeps you socially sharp, maybe, or something.
True.
And I
totally
feel like,
I think that's real.
Yeah, without that, it would be easy, as you said, to become a recluse, or more than that, maybe to just kind of really be out of touch with reality.
And maybe I would feel like differently about this if I were in like a stage of life where like I was raising children or something, and I was like, oh, like I was just like not working anymore professionally, because raising children, while I would like to think it's probably more fulfilling work than like whatever you're doing for a paycheck, depending on who you are, it's still like labor. And
absolutely, yes.
And
I don't
so, like,
think
I
that
like,
raising a child while retired like counts as being retired.
Yeah, like I agree with that. And so I don't know though, but I was like, oh, like if I just like me in my life status now, so I'm like less than 6 years away from that in theory, like less than 6 years away from 35. Well, that's weird to say.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I retire and I like look at where I am right now and I'm like, I'm a single gal who lives alone. I don't have babies. I have a cat. Like, this is my life. And I'm like, what would I like, what would it look like? And I truly think I would end up like pursuing other work in just like a less than 40 hours kind of way.
Me like, too. Yeah.
I think I would, and it like couldn't be just stuff I did from home. I just think like, I just would be really afraid if I retired that young. I would be like really depressed.
I think that you would do well if like after early retirement, maybe you started some kind of like socially engaged like volunteer work, or maybe like you started a program for people. I could see that being like very fulfilling, but like not something that would be lucrative, so it would like count as retirement.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, it just is wild. I mean, what would you want to do if you retired at 35? Like, how would you handle that?
If I retired at 35, I think I would have like a lot of grandiose plans about what I would do after retirement, like all the like skills I would learn and like the art that I would make and like places I would go. But I think what would actually happen is probably for the first couple of years, I would travel a lot and probably like smoke way too much weed, lose all sense
that
of time,
out.
And not leave the house for days, and probably really turn into my grandpa. But then I think maybe after a few years of that, I would become incredibly depressed and figure out how to like meditate and like breathe meaning into my life. I'd probably start volunteering. I don't know. I would probably just like do, maybe I would make scenery for like a local high school's theater program. Something like that, I think, is what I would eventually settle into. Something that felt good for other people, but also like scratched an art itch.
Yeah. Well, no, it's so interesting because you describe that, and like that's exactly what I'm afraid of. That I'm like, I think I would end up, if I was just all of a sudden retired at 35, I would be afraid that I would like drink too much, that I would get my sleep cycle, like I can imagine it because I'm such a night owl, becoming really out of sync with like normal operating hours, that I'd be up really late and then sleep really late.
Then you're isolated.
And then with that, yeah, then I would feel really isolated and I would be depressed, and that in my depression, I don't know. I think I would be afraid I would fall victim to like socially isolating myself and like overeating and like just like a bunch of like just like overindulging in anything.
Yeah, vices. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm like, so because that's how I assume it would go immediately, I'm like, I wouldn't want to retire at 35. And then it made me think, wow, I think no matter when you retire, you like have to have a plan so that it doesn't become that, right?
Absolutely. And that was what I thought of, kind of thinking about this question as well, because I was like, well, if I retired at 35 and then like experienced that like weird depression that I just described, because I'm only 35 or like 37 at that point, I have a lot of time to bounce back from that and like figure out a new meaning. But if you retire at 70, it'd be really hard to like figure out another thing to do, unless you've been like dreaming about your retirement for always.
I just think you maybe have to do with intention. But the idea of retiring at 35, I honestly, if somebody said I could, I don't think I'd want to.
Yeah, I would still want to. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of thought you would. I think it would make me feel too different from my peers, too.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of feelings about
I don't think you'd care.
Or like syncing up with them. Yeah, I don't have feelings.
Yeah. What's interesting? I don't know.
I'm an Aquarius.
Okay. There's not a right answer. I just was like, wow, this is intense.
That is.
I think it can be hard. That's all I'm saying. And, you know, speaking of hard, weird depression things, also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
We can't afford to be third wave about that, so whatever.
Jamie is like ready to do just like late night phone sex ads, and honestly, like, here for it.
That's, you gaslight the teacher. Okay.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it? I'm like, who's that guy?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
This is what I want, because I assume these people get to have deep chats all the time together because they go to youth group. And I was like, I just want someone to talk to me, and I was just like...
Anal insertions aside.
I do believe in fairies. I do. Welcome. Welcome. What a weird speaking of welcome to our show.
No, I enjoyed it. I do think that that was on brand.
Okay.
We talk about hard stuff too.
We do. We talk about hard stuff. I think tonight it's going to be like some fun, but welcome to Why Are You Like This? The weekly podcast where we dissect, you know, some hard stuff, but also a lot of fun stuff and early retirement, apparently. And also, you know, pseudoscience, real science, part of our culture, pop culture, human behavior, whatever we're noodling on at the time. And we do it all with the objective of determining why people are the way that they are. That's Jamie Ryan, pro early retirement in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams, afraid of the impending depression in Chicago.
That's true.
Yeah, it's honestly true for me too. That's okay.
It's okay. It's okay. We're all out here hustling. But in like a maybe a less like scared, but maybe scared. Should we be scared? I don't know. We'll find out. What are we talking about tonight? Today. Good morning. Whenever you're listening.
Whenever you are listening, we will be covering on this episode scams and con artists.
Ooh.
I know. It's a fun one that honestly I know I keep saying this, but I've wanted to do this episode since before we started the podcast, because I have a personal kind of anecdote connection that I will tell you about.
I mean, I know that you do, but like you have to stop saying that on every episode that you lead, because people will like stop believing you.
You know what? What's happening is I finally have the confidence in my abilities to pull the sort of gold star, in my opinion, episodes out of the vault, because I just felt like I didn't know how to do this episode before, and it took a little time.
Okay, but like we're doing it now, and I'm excited, and I am excited because I think scams and being conned and all that stuff, like there is shit we should be afraid of, but also like I love these kind of stories and I think they're fun, so I kind of can't wait.
They are fun, honestly. And now that I have some distance from my own story of being conned, I do think that it's a fun story.
Ooh, what a teaser trailer.
I know. But before we dive into that, I do want to tell you about a little thing that happened today because it was strangely relevant.
Wow, hot takes. I love it when that happens. I know. What makes me think we're living in a simulation.
Exactly. So my girlfriend Maddie has been helping her grandparents a lot lately because they're kind of about to transition into like a senior living facility and they're like just struggling to do daily tasks.
Okay, that's a hard stage of life.
It's a super, super hard stage, and it's a struggle. But they are, like, really weird about their mail, and they, like, make an event of, like, getting it at the mailbox and sorting it and then, like, responding, and it's, like, a whole system. So my girlfriend...
I like whole systems. I'm open to it.
Sure. My girlfriend got the mail for them and then also was like, hey, Grandma, I'll just take your mail with me and mail it for you so you don't have to drive down to the mailbox. And
she... Was that the wrong thing to say?
No. She let her.
Okay.
So...
Okay. Just checking in. Apparently, they had a whole system.
They did. But she was like, yes, like, granddaughter, you can mail this for me. So... Maddie brings the mail home and is looking at it, and all of them are addressed to like charities that we've never heard of. And
oh no.
I know. And she was like, fuck,
oh,
I
no,
feel
this
like
is a nightmare.
Yeah. So we stood in the kitchen like debating whether or not to open her grandma's mail, like that she was trying to have us send.
I mean, it's a federal offense, so be careful what you say on this podcast.
So we did open it. Yeah. And she had sent like $20 like to most of them and then like $50 to one. But we read like the charities and like what they were, and they were just like so bogus. And
oh no.
Right. And so
did you try and Google any of them, or
we
you
did
like, dig in?
We okay. did dig in, and they were bogus. And like
from
the wording.
Grandma.
I know, from the wording you could tell they were bogus. And my girlfriend was like, wow, she sends these out every day, I think. She was like, so she's probably sending, hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds, if not thousands.
Every day to various scams. And so, anyway, a couple of days later, we found out because of a bounced check that her grandma had written that her grandma was writing checks from a closed account. And so, like, jokes on them, because every check that she was sending to all of these cons would have bounced and like caused a charge for them.
I mean, this is okay.
It's poetic
this
justice.
This is truly hilarious. I mean, it's poetic justice because you're like taking advantage of an older person who I'm sure is being targeted. But
yes.
Then at the same time, you're like also falling victim to the hazards of taking advantage of an older person, which might be that they're like forgot that they don't have that account anymore.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I mean, like the allegory.
Yes.
Like, truly.
It's incredible. So
wow, I love this story. I mean, I'm glad that she like didn't actually like somehow give them the money because of the check closed account situation, but like what did you guys say? Is somebody having a heart to heart? Like
no, so now all of her mail is being screened by the family.
God bless.
I would like to read you just a brief excerpt from one of the letters that came in today.
Oh no, okay, I'm ready for the African prince. Bring it.
So this is just the opener. This is, it's just a very fraudulent, like from the address, everything. Anyway, the letter begins. Christmas 2019. The meaning of Christmas can sometimes be found in the most unlikely places. In the village of Ialabu in Papua New Guinea, an elderly man named Wata walked into our mission station one day. He was about 4 feet tall and clothed in primitive garments made of leaves. It goes on.
Oh, no. This is, like, terrible because it's, like, truly, like, it's like telling people, it's like telling this like fake like kind of tribalism story to like white people in America. I'm sorry, it is
to older white people in America who like think that they're helping like this mission. And it goes on to say how the man like came to them on his deathbed and asked to be baptized, and then like hours later was found like holding a rosary dead on his back in the jungle. Like,
oh my god,
it's just a lot.
Wow. Okay,
so yeah, now everyone's screening her mail, and I think that that's probably for the best, even though that's feels,
you know, seems
wrong.
Like, yeah.
yeah I don't know. I have never personally been involved in any kind of a mail scam. Other scams I'll tell you about later. But have you ever been like the victim of or adjacent to any kind of a scam?
I think like the closest I get like really touched by scams, although I know that they can happen to anyone. Like there are people who are clever and there are things that like seem logical in the moment. And then as time goes on, I like know friends who like then all of a sudden it was like, wait, this scenario has jumped a shark. I mean, I truly just think of like weird like calls that, you know, like just like the weird like voicemails you get that people are trying to be like, there's a warrant for your arrest.
Oh my God, like, I know.
Well, there's not. Like that kind of thing.
But, and like the IRS would not call me.
Right. Or like, but I think I'm also really skeptical of a lot of things that I get that like mention insurance or like my place of employment, because I'm also just convinced, I just like, I've been through enough like corporate trainings about phishing emails that I'm just like so skeptical of anything that arrives in my inbox. I've also listened to some really like great podcast episodes about people like being scammed, and so I don't know, I think I've heard about so many scams and like researched about it. I'm not saying I couldn't be taken advantage of, because I think anyone is susceptible to the right thing at the right time. But I think, like, if anything, like, I find myself, like, thinking that things sometimes are scams that, like, might not be.
I am hyper aware, yes, of things like that. Yeah. Some of it probably, like, you saw in retail and, like, I for sure see at my job of, like, we the other day at my work got like a fake dry cleaning bill. And that's like a very common con that people run, is like they'll send 50 restaurants a $50 dry cleaning bill. And a lot of the restaurants will just go ahead and pay it, even though like, that person was never in your restaurant and you didn't spill sauce on them.
I like you bringing this up. Because I hadn't thought about it from a work situation. And I'll say, like, that's probably my biggest experience with it in retail.
Me too.
Thinking more of my personal life. But was just like, dealing with fraudulent returns. Like, people trying like, return things that I was like, I mean, no. Like,
when I worked very briefly at JCPenney, a woman came in, and I did not work retail there, but I, like, saw this happen on my way out. And this woman was attempting to return an item from 10 years ago.
I have worked at retailers that shall remain nameless, but at points in time had, like, such loose return policies that I actually, like, had to return something that was, like, purchased 7 years prior.
Unreal.
It was my job.
You should never be allowed to do that.
Listen, it's crazy.
Hey, Bed Bath & Beyond will do that, too. One time I found a quesadilla maker in the basement that, like, was from a white elephant a long time ago, and there was no receipt or anything, but I was like, I bet this is from Bed Bath & Beyond. And I took it back, they located it, and they were like, yeah, we'll give you the money. And I was like, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the retailers, and like some of it is like truly great customer service, and some of it's really opening themselves up for like crappy things. I mean, there's a whole nother story I could go on, but Nordstrom notoriously has a very loose return policy. They very much like believe that's part of servicing their customer. I think it's probably changed somewhat in recent years because there's been so many people taking advantage of crazy things. But at one point in time, there was an article written that like these people went into a Nordstrom and returned tire chains. And the people at Nordstrom were like, okay, here's money. Like, Nordstrom doesn't sell tire chains.
No.
But people were like, we're trying to return these. And they were like, okay. And they did give them some amount of money. So, like, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. And you're like,
that's full crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, so crazy. But, yeah, I would say maybe that's the closest thing I ever dealt with, like, being behind a register dealing with, like, crazy returns. Or, like, I have had people try and pay me in counterfeit bills. Like, I've definitely dealt with that.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
So, I don't know. Maybe that's probably the closest I've gotten. And then, like, scam mail, scam voicemail, scam calls, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, older people in my family have experienced similar mail fraud situations.
Sure, sure, yeah.
I have also had, like, similar job situations where I've, like, had a brush with a con. But I do have one personal anecdote about being involved with a con artist that I have told you some of, but I would like to tell you in its entirety.
Oh, wow. I'm ready. I know some pieces of this, but I hope that I'm also surprised by things.
I hope you are too. And full honesty up front, I feel like a little nervous to tell this story. I think because I have some embarrassment about being taken advantage of, and it wasn't anything like crazy or out of control. I'll tell you about it. But I don't know. Anytime someone takes advantage of you, like, it's kind of embarrassing or something.
It's 100% embarrassing to be taken advantage of. And I think, you know, even if you haven't been, like, conned or involved in a con or anything like that, it's, like, there are things that are embarrassing about even just, like, going on, like, a bad date and, like, not calling out somebody who's, like, treating you in a shitty way. And then it's, like, hard to tell that story. I think we all, like, understand the feelings of, like, this thing happened and I didn't do anything to stop it, or I didn't realize how shitty it was, and then afterwards I was like, wait, what? And then you're like, I don't even know if I can tell people the story because I feel like a little
I feel like a fool a little bit.
Yeah, but that's so human. And, like, truly, I do want to say, like, I really believe anyone can be conned. And, like, there are people that I've, like, people I admire who I, you know, consume their podcasts, their writings, their whatever, who've told stories about being conned, and I'm like, it's not a matter of intellect. Like, crazy things happen to all sorts of people. It's not hard to be conned.
It's,
I think,
not
when people play the right one on the right person.
Exactly. It's about,
like, you and I aren't gonna send money to fake Christian charities, but, like, some people will. And, like, but there are other things we could be conned into. So
yes, there are definitely other things that I am personally susceptible to. So on that note, let me tell you about this. So 2 weeks after I moved to LA a handful of years ago, I auditioned for a band that was led by a girl who I'm going to call Jewel, because I'm going to change everyone's name for the sake of privacy.
Let's change it up.
And perhaps my personal safety in this story.
Okay.
You never know.
You don't.
So I saw, like, an ad for, like, seeking a guitarist slash, like, backup vocalist. And it was for a group that had, like, scheduled dates for shows that were coming up. So it was, like, a little bit of a time crunch.
Okay.
But I had just moved to LA and I was like, you know what? Like, fuck, I don't have a job yet. Like, I can go to this audition, like, tomorrow.
And, like, what's the worst thing that happens? You go to an audition and just get the practice of going to an audition. It's like, you should always take the job interview.
1,000%.
The worst thing that happens is you just get more practice at interviews.
Exactly. So I sent them an email, like, sent them, like, some video from a show that I did, and a few tracks that, I had, like, written, recorded, played on, and then, like, a little CV resume. So
totally,
I get a call back, honest to God, like, within 20 minutes.
Very fast.
Very, very,
Which
very fast.
Probably feels super flattering.
It was very flattering. And, like, I had just moved there. Like, I didn't even have my own place yet. Like, I was not settled. Like, I didn't anticipate, like, getting anything going this quickly. So
yeah,
I get
so
the call.
Probably feels, like, really fucking exciting. You're like, is this LA? Is
yeah,
this
yeah, like, right. I'm like, is this actually not going to be that hard? So
right.
So Jewel gives me a call and she explains her band and her project to me. She kind of walks me through, like, what the audition process will be like the next day. She also kind of just, like, name drops endlessly during this conversation in a way that was tiring, but I put aside.
Okay.
She also admittedly, like, really stroked my ego. She told me that auditioning would just be a formality, and based on, like, what I had sent them, that I essentially was already hired and I just had to, like, be approved by a couple of people who were, like, her boss at this record label who...
Yeah, she was basically like, I'm already obsessed with you, so...
Right, right. She's like, okay, like, I'm, like, a singer-songwriter at this label. I'm obsessed with you and I want to hire you in my band. Like, I just have to get a thumbs up from a couple of people. So, again, my mentality was, like, I was new to California. I absolutely, like, had dollar signs in my eyes.
Yes.
I was so excited to finally be paid real, like, living wage money to play music. Like, that was blowing my mind. Because if I was hired, which I basically kind of already was, they were going to pay me enough that I wouldn't have to get another job in California. And so, like, that the idea of, like, not even serving at all, like, when I moved out there was, like, just, like, such a dream come true. Like, I was like, I never. And you never... were
like, it's all happening. Like, I apparently I just had to move here and everything was going to happen.
Right. And just everything would come to me.
Yeah. 10 out of 10.
And I was also really excited to not have to be my own, like, band leader slash manager. Because any music that I had done before, I was very much, like, in charge of the group and, like, in charge of any, like, marketing connections.
100% you were, yeah.
And that is, like, not my favorite thing to do. So I was like, fuck yeah, I can just, like, be paid for a skill. Like, amazing.
Right.
So on the day of the audition, which was the next day, I drove to North Hollywood for, it was an audition slash rehearsal and also a photo shoot. So no pressure.
You're doing literally everything all at once. Yep.
Everything all at once in an afternoon. I also met Jewel in person for the first time, and she was, like, very warm and excited and made me feel super comfortable. And so I was like, oh, maybe, like, I misread her on the phone. Like, maybe this is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real skill, is, like, making you feel super comfortable.
Yes, yes. And I absolutely did. And I felt, like, instantly appreciated, which is, like, an interesting skill for someone to have.
Yeah, and also something that, like, anyone who is involved in creative pursuits doesn't necessarily feel all the time.
Absolutely. You do not feel that. So I also met my bandmates, who were other girls who had been hired, young ladies, young women, who had been hired to play in this band. So the structure of it basically is, like, Jewel
and it wasn't like you were the only person who was, like, new to that day, right?
Correct. Everyone else had been there, like, for, like, a month. And they, like, had a hole that I filled right before the first show.
Got it. Okay.
Also, this girl who I'm going to call Antoinette, but that was not her name, was the drummer, and she was an absolutely incredible drummer. And Jewel wasted...
And so you were also like, these people are talented.
They were unbelievably talented. Like, Jewel was not good, and I'll tell you more about that later, but, like, the people that were hired, I think because it was a well-paid position.
Yeah.
The other musicians in this group, I was, like, blown away by, and honestly, like, their skill level made me feel very insecure.
And
as, like, time went on, me feeling like maybe my skills were, or not maybe, but, like, I can say with confidence, like, they're just much better players than me. Like, they had gone to graduate school for musical performance. Like, it was not a level that I'm at, and that's okay.
Totally.
But that definitely made me feel like a weak link. And so I felt like I had to kind of compensate for that in other ways. So, like, later in the course of, like, being with that band, that led me to do, like, a lot of, like, musical arrangement, a little bit of, like, writing that started to make me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, helping them with, like, graphic design work, because, like, theirs was horrible. But I just felt like I had to, like, earn my keep or something.
You probably felt like you had to earn your keep. And then also, like, I mean, you mentioned, like, the graphic stuff, which, like, you know, you went to school for fine arts, so you have these skill sets. And if you didn't think their stuff was good, it's also like, you're like, well, if I'm a part of this, like, I want whatever is being put out to be, like, good.
Absolutely. I definitely felt, like, some shame about, like, how poor some of the promotional material was. And so I was like,
and so you're like, here, well,
we can fix this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just, like, doing them a favor. It's also, you're like, well, if my name, likeness, identity is going to be attached to this in any way, I don't want it to suck.
Absolutely. And I was having a lot of those feelings. But anyway, so back to this first day. So I met Antoinette, who Jewel told me, and this was true. Antoinette had just finished touring with Beyonce as, like, her main drummer. And so I was like, okay. So
she's so Antoinette's
obviously,
like, the, I mean,
unfucking believable,
but also, like, real deal,
like, and, like, well connected. Yeah,
yeah.
And so that Antoinette being there kind of validated the project, I think, to me and to some of the other players who came through during this time, because it
how could it not?
Of course. How could it not? So then we go outside for a 60-minute photo shoot that was very unstructured. It was fine. I, like, got to chat with my bandmates a little bit. And I, like, really, I was like, if I'm going to be spending a lot of time with them, I want to, like, know them.
Yeah, like, let's be friends.
Let's be friends. And I really liked Antoinette. The other two were, like, harder to jive with, but they were also, like, English second language, both of them. So
okay.
That probably just, like, put a little bit of a barrier in.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, while we're doing this photo shoot, Jewel is, like, actively attempting to network with people who are walking by on the street. We are, like, outside on the street in North Hollywood having our photos taken. And, like, when people, like, pause when they walk by, she, like, stops the shot, walks over, and, like, gives them a spiel about, like, her band and this project. And, like, is trying to, like, sell them tickets to a show. And I'm, like, equal parts, like, feeling mortified. Very socially uncomfortable and mortified. And then also I'm like, is that a hustle that will pay off? Like, maybe that, like, level of tenacity is good or works, but it's just really uncomfortable. I don't
It feels socially awkward, but you're like, is that how it is? Because, I mean, I will also say, someone who is does not have a musician's background, it's like, I mean, it's even weird when, like, if you're, like, on the strip in Nashville or something, and the way people, like, hassle for tips, it's like, it is how they make their living. And, like, it is kind of this, like, it's so aggressive, but it's like, also,
it must it be works working
for people. Yeah.
Yeah.
In some capacity. You know what I mean?
And well, so and people like, are afraid to say just, no. Is
that just, like, what you have to do?
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of bully people into, like, giving you a tip or coming to your show or whatever. But she, I mean, Jewel would network with truly anyone, anywhere, at any time possible. I mean, one time we were in a Starbucks and she made a stranger listen to her song on her earbuds from her laptop while I excused myself and went to the bathroom. So just like no kind of like awareness of like what is or isn't appropriate as far as networking.
Or like maybe like that was the plan, like that was like the way she was gonna do it, because like for like I think for you and me we're like that's so aggressive and so much, but like I don't know, maybe it's not for some other people. Like it didn't sound like she felt,
she did not feel any kind of way about that. No.
Yeah, I don't know, and it kind of depends on how other people react, because some like some people don't react in like a this is too much kind of way to that. So
yeah, no, I don't know. You're right. And watching her do that to people, yeah, some people stayed around and listened. So I guess it does work sometimes.
Yeah.
But so after that photo shoot, I signed some papers and was officially in the group / on the payroll, which was cash only, but I didn't mind.
That's a hard thing to complain about.
Yeah, yeah, I don't care. Anyway, so then we enter what I would kind of categorize as the glamoring phase / grooming period.
Okay.
So at this point, there's like a show coming up in like a week and a half, and we're like rehearsing all the time and getting ready for this, and the label is paying for everything.
I mean, that's badass.
Yeah, rental cars, like flights for people to come in to like work with us, places for people to stay. They're buying our outfits. They're paying us for performance and for the rehearsals at that point. At one time, this man just came in with like a bunch of like cold pressed juices for us. And there was a makeup artist, like free drinks, like truly, like everything was just taken care of.
Dreams.
And I had never experienced that before.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of talk about the girls. So like the three of us or the four of us that were hired as bandmates.
Right.
Showing loyalty in order to be able to live what they called a lifestyle of success.
Okay, so we've got some interesting syntax coming into play.
Yes. And as I mentioned, I was like very insecure about my skill level and had like a high desire for approval.
Sure.
And even though I thought that the music was stupid because like it truly was terrible music, I really just wanted to be liked and appreciated, and I wanted to like keep my income. And it felt like
you wanted to get paid to play guitar and like do whatever instead of serving tables in Los Angeles. Like, chill.
Absolutely. And if that meant that I had to, quote, show loyalty by like doing some graphic design favors, then I was gonna do that. And so I did.
Yeah, because if anything, you were just like, yeah, okay, it's like additional work, but like I am being paid for this. It's kind of like not clocking out right at 5. Like, we all kind of anticipate that to happen.
Exactly. It is not clocking out at 5. Unfortunately, my extra responsibilities grew. And what was happening was we would rehearse and there would be like it would just be fucking chaos because Jewel, who had written the songs, like, doesn't have, like, any musical, like, vocabulary or, like, terminology. So she couldn't communicate with us about, like, what she wanted and how she wanted it to sound, or, like,
okay,
there was no understanding of, like, we have to do this for this many bars, or, like, this chord progression goes this way. And because she was in charge of the rehearsals, and she thought that that was, like, something for us to deal with on our own time, she would always be like, well, you guys obviously just didn't practice. I gave you the recordings. And we're like, no, like, we're playing it how the recording is, but, like, you are varying from that structure. And so, like, we have to all do the same structure. So Jamie charted out all of the songs for everyone so that would no longer be an issue. And I was like,
your keep, homie.
I know. I was, like, honestly kind of nervous that that would be seen as, like, a weird overstep. And so I was, like, very anxious about it. But I was like, if I don't do this, like, we won't be able to play. And so I brought them in. And honestly, my bandmates were very, very relieved. And Jewel was clearly flattered that I made the charts. And she used this as an opportunity to give the rest of the group a lecture on commitment and loyalty.
Oh, wow.
And
oh,
at
wow.
this point, my relationships with the other band members began to decline.
Yeah, as you would imagine, then you became, like, whatever, like, one person that was, like, on...
Right.
That doesn't feel good.
Right. Like, if everyone's, like, angry at her, but she's, like, pulling me under her wing and, like, lecturing the group, it was uncomfortable.
Be more like Jamie. Nope. Sucks.
No. I'm like, I just did this so we could get through this time. Anyway, so the first show rolls around, and we're playing in this place in Santa Monica, and the show was very lame, but it was cool to meet, like, some of the other artists that were at that label. And I hope that they were not scammed, but who knows?
We can't know.
Actually, I could look them up. I did try to look a couple of them up and couldn't find anything. So I don't know.
Doesn't bode well.
So the first show, I'm not going to, like, detail everything that happened, but something interesting that did happen while we were there is I carpooled with two of my bandmates, not Jewel, but two of the other people. I had to park, like, out front of the venue to unload. And then Jewel's brother, who was, like, working for us, was supposed to unload our shit from the car, and then I was gonna, like, go in, and we had to, like, change and, like, get ready, and he was supposed to move my car to a different location.
Oh no.
And
I already don't like that this is part of the story. It doesn't bode well.
I had parked initially, like, right by the side door of the venue, and when I was, like, going up on stage to, like, start our set, someone opened that door and I saw my car right there still. And I was like,
oh, no.
Fuck, I'm going to get a parking ticket and I can't do anything about it. And
yeah.
So I, like, yelled to him. I'm not going to say his name. And I was like, hey, like, you have to move my car.
Like, that was your job. Your job was to move my car.
Right. And he was just like, I can't right now or whatever. And I'm like, okay, fine, fuck it, whatever. So we play the show. And after the show, I absolutely have a parking ticket. And one of the girls who had carpooled with me was like, oh, you should get the label to pay for that. Like, that's not your fault that happened. Like, you were just following the order of things.
That, I mean, that is true.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't feel like that would go over very well.
And it might not.
It might not, but it is the right thing to do. So I did not ask, but the other girl, the other guitarist, did ask Jewel about it. She told her that I got a parking ticket and that she thought that Jewel or the label were, like, responsible for paying for that. And later, Jewel came to me and thanked me for not saying anything about the parking ticket and went on a tirade about how ungrateful the other guitarist was for suggesting that they should pay for that ticket.
I mean,
the other guitarist later Venmo'd me for half of the ticket, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, because that's, like, that's what a person with a moral compass does, I think.
That is absolutely what a person with a moral compass does. Compass, excuse me.
I knew what you meant.
Just ridiculous. Wow. Yeah. And she was also told.
It's almost like, I almost want to say, like, her coming to you and being like, oh my God, I can't believe this person. It's like part, like, It's almost like a little gaslighty. It's also kind of just like Jedi mind tricks.
Yes, it's telling me that that behavior is inappropriate and like verbally rewarding me for like not sticking up for myself.
Which is like, I will say, my mom used to do this to me and my sister when we were kids in like a in a different way, but it's like 100% what it makes me think of, that I was like, this is Jedi mind tricks. The way my mom used to like parent us places when we would be like a restaurant or like a grocery store or like wherever, and like some kid would like be having like a full fit. Mm-hmm. My mom's move all the time would be like, oh my god, look at that child. And then she'd be like,
oh yeah, like, you so told me glad this.
You and your sister would like never you do would that.
Never
like, you would never, you're so much more well behaved than that, like gosh, I'm like so grateful. Like, and my mom's like, y'all would like peacock, like you'd puff out your little chest and be like, that's right, I would never have a fit like this kid in the aisle of a Kroger, and which is hilarious, but I'm like, it's Jedi mind tricks. And I feel like that's what she was doing to you, of like, well, you would never do that, and you're all you can do is be like, yeah, I would never do that, and like, yeah, not do that.
Right So that is absolutely, I think my mother's where I was version at
is a little more wholesome, but indeed it is own.
Indeed it is. So also after that happened, Jewel told us there was a guy who was like in charge of the label who lived in Seattle, who I only met one time, and it was when he came to this show in Santa Monica. And he's very, very, to look at him, he is an imposing figure.
It was a large man.
Very tall, muscular man. He wore sunglasses the whole time at night and had his arms crossed exclusively. I was introduced to him, but like we didn't talk at all. He was just like, oh yeah, I know who you are.
And you were like, cool, bye.
Like,
cool.
Yeah. I guess like after the show, Jewel had told him about like the parking ticket and just like how things were going and like what everyone was contributing. And she put him on speakerphone when she was with me, like so that I could hear what he was saying. And he was just like going on a tirade. But he
didn't know that she had him on speakerphone?
I don't think so, no.
Ooh, interesting.
But he was like going on a tirade about like how you have to be careful, like what people you involve in a project, and like they have to be showing loyalty, and like if like these girls aren't like showing that they're loyal enough, then like maybe you have to find different people. And he was like, obviously like Jamie's helping you out with like graphic design, she's like, yeah, wanting to hang out with you, like that's a loyal person, and like you got to have more loyal people. And then went on to like say how the parking ticket thing like meant that that girl should like no longer be in the group because she was like a bad seed.
That is like, ooh, like whenever people start to like wrap money in with the word loyalty,
so much use of the word loyalty,
it's, I mean, just first of all, it's too much use of the word loyalty for like something that you're getting paid for, like it's a job.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I did not have any creative control, so like why would I so be loyal?
Right. But just, I don't know, I get nervous when people talk about loyalty and they talk about it in the context of money. I just think that's very dangerous.
Absolutely. Then a week later, we got like another call from him, and it feels like Charlie's Angels or something, like where we're like all together rehearsing, and then like he calls,
getting
and like
calls from this like random dude, yeah,
everything, and like listen to this man who's like bankrolling us, like give us a shitload of criticism about that show, but like we've never talked to him. It's so weird.
Wow.
Yeah. And then to continue to, I think, like try to keep us in the project, there was a lot of talk about like preparing for international travel, and like they kept saying something about like getting a fleet of Teslas, and I was always just like, why are you talking about the Teslas again?
We're gonna get a fleet of Teslas.
Shut up about the fucking Teslas.
I mean, that's when like those are the things that like initially that wasn't happening and it felt like normal, but then those are the things that you start to like maybe feel like this is so weird, but you're also like in too deep to be like, guys, what? But if they had started that way, you would have been like, wait, what?
Yeah, it was just, I don't, and it was a weird juxtaposition of being so weird about like a $60 parking ticket, but then being like, we will soon buy you a Tesla. Like, what?
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So then they are like continuing to like book dates and like talk about like trying to piggyback on a tour, like with a like a larger band. And I'm showing up at rehearsal and I'm looking around like, guys, we don't have any fucking material. And also, Antoinette quit when we stopped getting paid for rehearsals, which at this point had happened.
Okay.
So yeah, that was okay. A major shift. So then we're all like trying to get them to book us a show ASAP because that's how we get paid.
And you're not creatively involved. So you're basically like a studio musician who's not being paid at this point.
1,000%. Yes. Yes.
But you've been being paid before and you're like involved. Mm-hmm. And so it's like now it's like, well, what do I mean?
Yeah, but yeah. Then when Antoinette asked about, like, hey, why wasn't I paid for this rehearsal, that was met with, well, if you don't believe in the project, then, like, maybe you don't need to be here. And so she fucking left. And I should have known at that point when she left, like, she should have been the little canary because, like, obviously she knows what she's doing. And
yeah, she's done it before.
Yeah, she's experienced. I should have probably followed suit, but I didn't. What I did instead was to start charting out like songs, partial songs we'd played, and like really pushing for new material. I was like actively questioning like how we would ever tour with just 3 songs.
As you should.
Yeah, just really kind of dogging them about like when are we like allowed to write new material and like when will you book us a recording date, because like we can't really do anything without that.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started putting new material together because I was like, well, fuck this, I'm not waiting.
Right.
And we started to all move forward with that new material. But that came to a halt when they told me that I was not allowed to copyright it. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to, like, write this material and teach it to everyone. And then, like, you copyright not it on the under your it, name. Yeah. Like, fuck that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, touched that process enough that you're like, I'm not going to make music and not copyright it because of the weird loopholes and, like, spaces that can put you in.
1,000%.
Do you feel like, though, the kind of hope on their end was that if things remained stagnant, like, these more talented musicians would just start creating 1,000% for free?
1,000%. Okay. I think that they were creating, like, I don't know, I feel like the initial payment was, like, the lure to get good musicians to audition. Then they ensnare all of those good musicians by like glamoring them with like an incredible show of wealth and a lot of promises. And
right.
Then eventually like the money starts to kind of fall back and like nobody said anything about the first missed payment. But like I did get a text from my bandmate about it and we were like, well, like maybe in a couple days it'll come through. And then just like not getting paid and not getting paid and like not being on a payroll anywhere like meant that we didn't have any rights to anything. Like we had no paper trail,
right?
Because
you're being paid in cash.
Being paid in cash, and like I admittedly did not have a copy of like the paperwork that I signed, which I know was not an exclusive contract, but probably said some shit about how I would or wouldn't be paid. But I guess I didn't fucking pay attention.
That is something I listen. How many of us sign something that we don't read the fine print on?
Yeah. And I should have, because I've heard horror stories and I just really should have known to do that. But I think you're right that the idea was to gather a pool of musicians who would create free content for them that then they could market and sell. That was absolutely the plan.
I don't remember the details of this, but there was something that happened with, like, some...
With a credit card?
It was, like, some sort of, like, business that was trying to prove the importance of reading the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall if they were, like, a financial institution or, like, a CPA or something, but they wrote something in the fine print. Print that like people typically don't read, and it had been in there for a very long time that was like, you know, if you mention this line, like we'll give you $500 or something like that. And it was in their whatever contract that like a lot of people signed for a very long time, and then somebody who read all the fine print was like, hey, and they were like, cool, and they paid her out, and then they like were very public about it, about how you need to read the fine print on contracts. And I was like, well, that was fucking great marketing. And then and then everybody's like, oh my god, like I signed that contract.
I signed it.
$500. Like I don't remember who it was or who did it.
Right.
This is probably like 5 or so years ago, but I remember being like,
that's clever.
It was super clever marketing.
And it's positive.
It was really well done.
Yeah.
But it was also, like, I think when they said it, they're like, yeah, we've been running this for 2 years. Like, tens of thousands of people have signed it. This woman's the first person who noticed.
And that's crazy.
I mean, it was like, no, but it's true, though. How many things have you signed to, like, Like, if you've, like, opened a new account at a bank, if you've signed the code of conduct at a job.
They summarize it for me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you think about, like, you're, like, filling out first day paperwork at any place you've ever worked. Have you read every line? No.
No. No, I have not.
I don't. No, I think most people don't. I'm not saying that's a good practice. This is a good reminder that, like, well, we should. But, like, what you're saying is not abnormal. I think anybody who's listening has done the exact same thing.
Yeah, I think so too. And thank you.
Which I think enlightens us to how easy it is to be conned. Also, another great example where they like talked about contract-ish being terrible was on an early season of America's Next Top Model. Mm-hmm. Tyra Banks had her dad come in and like pose as an attorney, and they were all like, you have to sign these contracts before you do the shoot, and like everyone has to sign it. And so all these people are like, okay, and they like are signing them, and they're like, maybe one or two people were like, wait, what? And I don't know. But then everybody signs it, and the lesson that like Tyra, you know, for television mm-hmm. all things
right.
is like, they just signed the rights of like every photo they would ever take or something.
Oh,
and she goes,
my
I mean,
God.
Like, she had them sign something that was truly insane, and then she burned them dramatically
yeah,
for reality
of course,
television.
Yeah.
But she was like, this is a lesson. She was like, people will try and take advantage of you in this business, and like, don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Like, don't just sign shit that you don't read.
And entertainment is an unregulated industry, which is crazy, but it's hard to regulate, I guess. And so that
100%.
Shit can happen.
Yeah, and her dad, like, posed as, like, an attorney or something for the show and, like, just, like, really, like, was a great actor and was like, no, you have to, like, whatever. And she was like, this is my dad. Like, you guys didn't actually do this, but, like, you could have.
You could have easily.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, yes, things were getting tense. I was maybe starting to suspect that the intention was always to have the band members just start writing the material for free.
Sure.
And so I was still like
scary
hanging
suspicion.
On, scary suspicion, but I'm like hanging on for some reason. And I invited all of my bandmates to go to a show that my friend who also lived in LA was playing. Because I was like, this would be a good like group activity. We get to know each other a little better, like see some
oh, yeah,
music
great.
That doesn't suck. Yeah, it would be fun. Unfortunately, only Jewel and I went to the show. So that was a night just for the two of us to hang out. And it was weird, and like she networked with everyone in a way that like was uncomfortable, but is okay.
And you were like, "Oh, why am I here with this girl?"
Right.
Who's like,
why am I here? But
can't just like have a good time. Yeah,
cannot just have a good time. Exactly. And at the end of the night, when we were closing out at the bar after the show, she went up to close out her tab, and when he asked her for her last name, she gave a name that I had never heard of. And I like if her last name, if I knew her as Jewel Campbell, she asked for a credit card for Banks. And I was like,
yeah,
Banks, what? And she was like,
wait,
she was like, shh, shh, I'll tell you in a minute. And it was like, oh, my God, like, is this like a fraudulent credit card? Like, are you an identity thief? And she was just like, shh. And I was like, oh, my God, you're an identity thief. And she whispered to me that the head of the label, that guy that I was talking about earlier, I'm going to call him Shadrach because it's a fun
Let's
biblical
call him
reference.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not that far away from his real name, so I'm going to call him that. Anyway, so she whispers to me that soon Shadrach will get me a credit card too. And
oh, fuck.
I was like, what the actual fuck? So there's like credit card fraud going on here. Like, I don't understand where money's coming from. Like, cash flow is like unpredictable. So that was like the biggest red flag that I like should have been like, okay, and now I'm leaving. But instead I continued to get drunk with Jewel and walk around West Hollywood and then downtown LA really fucked up because I was lonely and I didn't have a lot of friends. And then she spent the night at my apartment because she was drunk. But she lived downtown, so I don't know why she didn't just go home. But
yeah,
I didn't.
But I mean, we've all, everybody's done this in their 20s. Like, this is.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Oh, side note, she was also like much, much older. I think she was 39 at this time, and I was
oh, wow.
24.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
So that's a dynamic that I actually have not revealed. So there is that.
Okay, noted.
So she spends the night, and the next morning at 7 a.m., I hear some noise and walk out of my bedroom into the living room where she is listening to a daily conference call meditation led by Shadrach. They do this every day for 90 minutes. He just like talks to a conference call of like 30 people and does like this inspirational morning meditation. It was very strange and very intense.
What was he talking about? Like, what kind of things were said?
Honestly, like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It was a combination of kind of like self-affirmation, like, I deserve prosperity, I deserve wealth. Then there was like some stuff that felt like new agey in like an Egyptian way. Like, he was saying something about ISIS, and it was a lot. And it was, yeah, mystical but not religious, and like self-affirming.
Okay.
So that made me uncomfortable. And then I was made more uncomfortable when Jewel told me.
And then you were kind of like maybe feeling like, how many jewels are there?
How many jewels? Exactly. In his crown. But also she told me that people buy the tapes and they go out to like hundreds of people. So there's like 30 people on the call. But then there's like a whole bunch of people that are like buying the tapes of the morning like meditation. The recording. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so she pressures me into like sitting silently and listening with her. And at this point, I get excited that it might be a cult.
I know you. I've been your friend for 20 years. Of course you were excited that maybe it was a cult.
Yep.
Like, of course this excited you.
And yeah. I have to say, this is the moment where I was like, this is 1,000% bullshit. I saw the credit card thing last night. Like, everything is like crumbling around us and they're still like renting Lamborghinis. Like, why are they doing that? And now there's like a strange religious leader element, and I have to be out, but I can't tell them that I'm out yet because I want to know more. So at this point, I
mean, listen.
Yes. My attitude shifted, and I spent a little more time like with that group. Another drummer came in who I again really liked. I kept liking the drummers, but
shout out to the drummers.
Yeah,
listen, but the I dated group is a just drummer trash. Once.
Yeah.
They're fine.
They are fine. They're fine. That drummer was also a lesbian, so that was a little fun camaraderie there.
I love it.
Another time, Jewel spent the night, and in the morning, I woke up to her literally yelling at Shadrach on the phone. And again, I come out into the living room, and she is yelling over and over, "Kings don't hide their truth." And I'm not. I'm not 100 on what that means.
This is like Jewels in the Crown. Like, this is like that saying, like, kings don't hide their truth.
Yes, kings don't hide their truth. And
I mean, this is a very weird way to say you're lying to me, but sure.
Yes, exactly. A very weird way. A weird subservient way. But I think
maybe she was like also, yeah, it's a kind of subservient because she's still like calling him a king.
Exactly. Exactly. So then when she got off the phone, she explained to me that he was upset with her for flirting with a guy on Facebook, and she was upset with him for treating her like a side piece. And
were they in a relationship?
So I had suspected a relationship, but I wasn't sure. And they did have some kind of a relationship, and she told me to keep it quiet. But she went on to tell me how she met Shadrach when she was 17. She started playing in his band, and he is...
Oh my God, he is like her pimp.
He was her musical and business mentor ever since. And they often sexually involved. He was, at some point during that time, married and had a child. Not with her, but with like another woman. And Jewel and Shadrach, she told me they did... they banged when he was in town for that show in Santa Monica. And she was like very upset about that because she thought that they were going to be like for real in a relationship. But he was like on the other end of the phone saying like, basically like, I'm a man and like, sorry that I acted like a man. And that's
when she was yelling,
kings don't hide their truth, because he was like telling her that he would be with her, but like just continuing to keep her like a long distance booty call.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, layers.
Yes.
Layers.
Yes. Many layers. The same morning, Jewel also told me a lot of very intense stories from her life. And it's impossible for me to know, like, what is and isn't true of that.
Right. Because we believe her to be a con woman.
We believe her to be a con woman. So I suspect it was a mixed bag. And, like, she definitely inflated stories and, like, self-aggrandized constantly.
Sure. And, like, maybe all of it was rooted in truth, but, like, elements of it were totally hyperbolized, which is...
Yeah, maybe. Know. Yeah, that's not uncommon. But she also told me, like, some very heartbreaking things that I think were probably true. And out of respect, like, I'm not going to share any of that. But I just want to... Sure. Like, acknowledge that she was a very complicated person with, like, a really warped sense of the truth. So,
wow, yeah.
Like, this conversation kind of made me see her as maybe, like a victim rather than a predator or, like, someone in charge. Like,
sure.
For so long, I had seen her as kind of just, like, this person who I was aware was, like, a manipulative narcissist who was using me. But then, like, seeing her conversations with Shadrach and, like, how he talked to her, like, how subservient she was, like, then hearing her backstory, true or untrue, I don't know. But, like, it just totally, I felt like she had been conned, too.
Yeah, I feel like she had.
Yeah, I feel like she had, absolutely. And it was so, like, I just, the pieces of her life didn't make any sense. Like, one time when she came to stay over, because, like, sometimes we would go out, like, in North Hollywood or, like, somewhere that was closer to, like, my neighborhood.
Yeah, and L.A., like, is so spread and traffic is so terrible that, like, you know, post up.
You post up. But in her trunk were, like, seriously an entire closet worth of clothes, like, folded and organized and, like, a row of, like, 12 pairs of shoes. And I was just like, I wonder... if you for real have a place to live, because she told me that Shadrach paid for like a penthouse apartment for her in downtown LA. And like, I think the truth was she was probably just like getting hotel rooms when she could or like staying with people when she could. Cause there was always a strange sense of like urgency and relief when I was like, oh yeah, you can stay over tonight. So
yeah,
I almost feel like she wanted to do that cause it meant that she didn't have to pay for a hotel that day.
Right.
Which could be true or untrue, but I think so.
Yeah, that's intense.
It is very intense. And then we went to another show, like, in my neighborhood, and she, like, disappeared for the bulk of the show we were seeing. And at the end, I was like, where were you? And she was like, oh, I was making $30,000. And I was like,
I mean, like, I'm going to need you to elaborate.
I was like, excuse me? And then she showed me this app on her phone that is absolutely, like, an MLM scam, like, multi-level marketing. And basically it was like Facebook and you get paid for like activity on your posts, but it was an invite only thing that you like had to pay to download. And she was like, she was like, oh, I made like $30,000 like because I posted this selfie from the bathroom. Like that's why I was in there so long. And like all of these people like in my downline like reposted it or interacted with it. And so like I make a portion of like all the money that they make. And she was like, and Shadrach makes a portion of the money I make because he invited me. And when you join, I'll get a portion of your earnings because I'll be your upline. And I'm like, how long am I going to hang out here? Like, what am I?
You're like, yeah, I
what
mean,
am I doing
am
now?
I,
like, what?
When am I, what, like, yeah, like, when
at
I
what
join,
point
like,
will I leave? At what point will I leave this group? So,
right.
Apparently not soon enough, but. Then she starts, like, over the course of the next few weeks being, like, overly, like, touchy and flirty. And, like, she knows that I'm gay. And to my knowledge, she is not.
Right.
And that night, like, after we
but
went.
But it was, like, a tonal shift. She was treating you in a way she hadn't, like, previously.
Absolutely a tonal shift. Yes. Okay. Yes. And it was after I, like, mentioned that, that, like, the fact that I was gay, like, came up in conversation. And it was, like, the next day there was a shift. And. Just
oh, that's weird.
Yeah, just
ooh,
like,
I don't like this.
Touching on me in a weird way, like saying really flirtatious things. Like, you know when someone's like coming on to you.
100%.
And then like at my apartment because we like stayed there. She like came into my room like after I said goodnight and was like trying to get in bed with me, and I was like, no, like you have to go back out to the couch. And she was like visibly very irritated. And I know it was so weird. And then like there was this video of us playing, and the drummer at the time texted me about it. She was like, whoa, did you see Jewel like wink at you, flip her hair, and then look at the camera in that video? And I was like, oh, I sure did. And I saw it when it was happening live, but I ignored it. So that just introduced like another strange power element where I was like,
yeah,
I have no idea like what to do. I'm like being pressured into like these strange meditations and
oh my God.
Right. And like I'm not being paid and I'm like being told that like I'm a bad person if I don't like contribute out of feelings of loyalty. And they like continue to promise like these crazy things that they're not delivering on, but it's like dangling a carrot that kind of keeps me around. But like at that point, I was just finally like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't also like have her hitting on me constantly on top of everything else.
Were you stressed of though, like, how do I like,
I couldn't figure out this? Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to tap out, which is part of why I put it off for so long.
Which I think we all do in all sorts of things, like, to be honest. And like, I think it's why like ghosting culture exists, which like I just think ghosting is so stupid.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But like I just, yeah, I understand how it's like scary to tap out.
Yeah, it was. So I called her one time and told her basically like, hey, like I can't continue to do this for no money. I'm sorry, but like thanks for the experience. Like I wish you well, whatever. And in the process of that conversation, she convinced me to agree to stay on as a consultant or coach for the new girls that they were going to bring in because everyone had quit at this point. And
were you the last woman standing?
No, I found out like because they texted me the next day that like literally the day after I quit, the other three quit also.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So everybody, yeah. And so I did agree to be a coach for the new hires just to get off the phone. I had no intention of follow through.
Sure.
I never answered her when she texted me about this later. And like, I was not going to drive to North Hollywood again and do 6 hours of production work for no money again.
No.
So I felt really stupid about that. And it like, I would tell people pieces of that story here and there, but like looking at it all together, I just like see how manipulative everything was. And like from the beginning, there were major red flags that like I ignored for reasons of like that you, I don't know, we're like wired to trust people. And like a lot of shit that I read about like the psychology of conning people talks about like how as people, it is our inkling to trust. Like if I come up to you and I say like, oh, hi, like my name's Jamie, you're not going to be like, it's probably not. Like you don't automatically assume that someone is lying.
No, you don't. It's kind of that innocent until proven guilty assumption, but like socially.
Exactly.
And I think that like, I don't want to make like cons about sex, but like they're like, I think like an easy one that a lot of people can relate to is like if you are in like a dating situation and like sometimes you look back on things and you were like, oh, like this person was just like trying to get laid, mm-hmm. or like, oh, like this person was just like trying to get me to buy them dinner, or like, mm-hmm. oh, like whatever it is, like whatever the motivation is, it's like, I think sometimes you like hindsight's 2020 and like the initial things are like fine. And then you're like, wait a minute.
Of course. Yeah.
That and was like connecting the dots, looking backward. It seems actually like a different way than it felt in the moment.
Right. Because you're existing in a different reality than the person who is conning you. Like,
yeah.
My reality was that like that was a group with like real financial backing that wanted to hire me to play because that's what I was told. What they actually wanted was for us to work for no money and give them free material. And if I look at everyone's actions under the lens of the goal is to get free material, then everything makes a ton of sense. But if I look at it as like this is a legitimate business, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Mm. But it, but like it was a slow enough roll that like I think like the beginning of it, like things didn't necessarily seem awry. There were things that you were like, oh, whatever, like I'm not like this person isn't going to be my best friend because socially just like it's not my vibe. But like that also doesn't make you necessarily question how genuine like the professional proposition is necessarily.
Absolutely not. And there is like,
because we've all worked with people we don't like.
Yeah. And I was thinking of it as a job, not as a family or like friendships. And like thinking about the process of how that happened, I looked into a book this week called The Confidence Game: Why We Fall for It Every Time by psychologist Maria Konnikova.
Okay, Maria, welcome to the program.
So in her book, she explains or attempts to explain the psychology of like the grifter and the mark, and takes you through kind of like the anatomy of a con. And
okay.
So it's interesting for me to read.
I've never heard this really spelled out before. I'm like excited.
I hadn't either. So it starts with the put up, which is like the process of identifying the perfect victim. So this is them putting out an ad calling for musicians and then probably screening them for people who are like seem vulnerable or on the phone, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then there is the play, which is seducing the victim. And this was for me like the first phone conversations, like them appearing to like be wealthy and have a lot of connections. Then there is a stage called the rope, and this is pitching the scam, getting like the mark to agree to invest in whatever you're doing or sign a contract to be in a band, for example. The moment when like they're in.
Well, and let's say if you had jumped from the beginning, you had like seen her use a credit card that didn't have her name on it and had like heard this weird guided meditation, you would have been like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
You didn't see that until later. And so like it is the like, well, now you're in like deeper and now you're like seeing a little bit more of this and like, are you still bought in?
Exactly. So, I mean, it's like a fucking cult where like you start to see more and more of the red flags, but you have now like these relationships with people who have kind of earned your trust a little bit. So after the rope is the tale, which is in a lot of cons, like some kind of a sob story about like needing help or whatever information validates the pitch, basically.
Okay.
Then you have the convincer, which is a kind of affirmation of the rope and the tale. So for me, the convincer was like them sending a car to pick me up and like getting like a passport for me and doing all of those things that like convince me that it is real. And
yeah, that it's legit.
Right. Right. I'm like this, you know, it's obviously real.
For you, probably some of that was like the credibility and success outside of this group of the first drummer.
Yes. So much of it. Without her, this all wouldn't have even worked, which is crazy. She was not in on it, though, I'm sure.
No, but then there's also some stuff that it's like, it's like kind of dangerous because their con is kind of dangerous because they had a bunch of people who were like being conned kind of collectively. So mm-hmm. like you and the rest of the band, but then they very quickly like pitted you guys kind of against each other with the parking ticket thing. And when you wrote out some of the mm-hmm. parts, and then she shamed other people for not doing that kind of thing. So then it like separated you guys from like maybe having those moments where you'd be like, hey, is this fucked up or not?
Yeah.
Because and now you're kind of not sure about the other people.
Exactly. And one time I did ride in the car with the bass player, and we had a conversation where like she showed like her irritation with the project, and I was like, oh, thank God. Like, I'm so frustrated too. And like, I can't believe this. And she was like, oh my God. Like, I thought you were like so on board. And I was like, well, then I'm doing like a good job of performing, but no, this is like a bullshit project. Like, absolutely not.
And I mean, that seems like that was the goal. Like, they were probably making all of you think that the other people were more on board.
Yes. Yes. 1,000% they were. Because we weren't really talking to each other that much. Anyway, so after like,
I'm sure that was intentional.
I'm sure that it was too. So after like the convincer and like everything plays out, you get the breakdown of the con, and mm-hmm. this con did not succeed how they wanted it to, obviously. I saw too many red flags. Other band members were getting frustrated, leaving. And when we all left, apparently Shadrach like really lost his shit and cut all of Jules' funding. So if that's true, that sucks.
Yeah. But wow.
you kind of like reap what you sow a little bit, like building your house on sand. I don't want to, you know.
Yeah. 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 Heard. Yeah.
Heard that. But I don't know. I feel better almost telling this story. I've felt weird about it for so long. I don't know. Just had like a little post-con shame, I think.
I feel like I had like a lot of things in my life, like interpersonally, that while it wasn't like a con in like a fiscal or like work way, that I'm like I feel like emotionally played by people in like different situations and different stages in life. And those are the stories that are the most embarrassing to tell, because you kind of are like afraid to be like, well, like, yeah, I hung around and let this person like treat me poorly and like didn't say anything, like, and be it like platonic friendships or romance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like kind of an embarrassing story to tell,
because it is. On We've some talked level, about you do want to be
like,
before.
I was emotionally conned.
Right.
And while it's not like fiscal or like work, like those are hard stories to tell.
They are absolutely hard stories to tell. And in the vein of kind of like being embarrassed about it, there's like one classic con that I want to tell you about because I think it's hilarious.
I love a classic con.
So there is a con where like whoever the con artist is, or the grifter, if you will create a fake website that is like an online sex toy store, and they promise to bill you through a discreet, like, alternatively named business. So let's say this website is called, let's just say, Wet Pussy Games.
Why not? Something checks out.
Yeah, something that like you wouldn't want to appear like on your mail or like bank statement.
Sure, you don't want like something loudly on your credit card statement that says Wet Pussy Games.
No,
okay.
You might not. So
you might not.
You order your sex toys, and when you see the charge appear, it appears from a company called Fine Mill Papers. So great. It's super discreet. Nobody's going to know that you ordered the sex toys.
People think you love cardstock.
Yeah.
You're just reprinting some resumes. Who's to say?
Yeah, who's to say? So fast forward 2 weeks, and the company emails you to say that for whatever reason, they're unable to deliver the product, but they will immediately refund you.
Okay.
3 days later, you receive a check for a full refund. For real. They're paying you back. That part is not a con. But on the check, it says that the money is from Wet Pussy Games instead of Fine Mill Papers. And
And you don't want to deposit the Wet Pussy Games money.
Yep. So you just eat it. It said something like 40-60 split. Like 60% of people don't cash the check and 40% go ahead and cash it.
I would love to cash a Wet Pussy Games.
I would
check.
Too. Like, I think it'd be fucking hilarious. I would cash that.
Send me your wet pussy money. I want it. Okay.
Send me your wet pussy money. But yeah, a lot of cons prey on feelings of embarrassment, because we won't tell on someone if we're embarrassed that they did something to us, you know?
Well, and that's something too. It's even, let's say you get conned on something really unembarrassing, like the con things involve themselves. Let's say it's like a life insurance policy.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, it's not
buying
like
life
sexual
insurance
or
is
personal.
Not an yeah buying life insurance or homeowners insurance even
sure
is not an inherently embarrassing thing to do. I think we think people insure things, checks out as normal. But when, let's say that like there is like fraudulent stuff going on, the person who sells you this policy is a con artist, they take you for some money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really embarrassing for people to report.
It is.
There are then things that you look back and you're like, I should have known this was messed up.
Nobody likes to feel like a fool.
No. It's a really hard like place to sit in. I think it's a really uncomfortable emotion. And it is that like, well, I should have known, and you kind of wondered like should I have known? And like, we're talking about, you know, your girlfriend's grandma at the beginning, and you're kind of like, oh my god, how did she not know? But it is like,
yeah, she has no idea.
They played the right thing to her. And
yes,
it is,
and that is
if you get duped.
I think that's the bottom line about like not falling for scams or cons, is like being woke to the fact that like there probably is a specific con that would work on you because of whatever like your emotional needs or insecurities are. Like for me, this one worked because like I was insecure about like being new to Los Angeles and insecure about my skill level and hungry for friends and validation. And so like that made me vulnerable to like emotional and professional manipulation.
For sure. Totally.
In the same way that maybe like, I don't know, like a middle-aged person who feels like stuck in their job might be like hungry for adventure and change and maybe could fall prey more easily to like a travel scam or something like that.
Sure. Or the scams that, you know, people are in these like multi-level marketing, I'm going to make this money from home kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think that appeals to a lot of people. And I think that's why those are often successful scams, is because a lot of people are like, yeah, I like, I'm stuck at this dead end, go nowhere job.
Right.
I just want to like not leave my house and be like financially fine. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's too good to be true, but I understand why people want it to be true.
Of course they do. Of course they do. And side note, an excellent show about multi-level marketing scams.
Ooh, say more.
Is called On Becoming God in Central Florida. It's a Showtime series starring Kirsten Dunst. It's amazing.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
Truly, truly incredible. Anyway, I'm not going to derail on that show. But so we all become marks or susceptible to cons for a variety of very personal reasons. Any of us really could be susceptible. But I was like, but why would someone be the con? Like, what is it, what's going on for you?
How do you become a con artist?
Right.
How does that become like your life of choice?
Right. And I like honestly could not find a lot of satisfactory answers. It felt just kind of like what you'd expect. In the book, The Confidence Game, that I mentioned earlier, she talks about like, for some con artists, it's about like the attention or like being at the hub of like some big plan, because then it's kind of all about you, or it's about like needing to feel like you're maybe like in control of a scenario, or honestly, the majority of people, it's just for financial gain, and maybe they don't have like an amazing moral compass. And then sometimes it's because there's a dark triad of traits, and maybe that person is, you know, a little sociopathic and things aren't great, but there's good reason. It's just what you'd expect. It's just shitty people. Sorry, but it is.
Well, I mean, yes, because I guess it's kind of that, like if you're taking advantage of other people, that's shitty. I mean, you can go like somebody who does it is a shitty person. But also to me, like to pivot back to the mid-level marketing, whatever, those kinds of scams, it's like this too good to be true kind of thing. And it's not doing the work and being like, yeah, I'm just going to like make whatever money from home. And on some level, I think con artists are falling susceptible to the same kind of idealized life in which you're not really doing the work, but you're making the money. But you're just maybe more willing to compromise other people in the way on your right. way up that ladder of however you're doing that. And there are probably folks who do that more sinisterly than others.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably people who, I don't know, put on blinders. It's like going to war and shooting people.
Ew,
you know,
you're
it's
right. Like, you're right.
It's like, well, if you have prioritized these other things that you think are more important than, you know, being on the front line somewhere and like killing someone else, but like also maybe you've been taught that like there are things bad about other people, or you hear like con stories about maybe guys who grew up like poor or very blue collar, and they feel super comfortable scamming the rich because they've been taught shitty things about the rich, like very kind of Robin Hood-esque, if you will.
Absolutely.
And so like there's something to that, you know? And so like maybe people that they're scamming, they feel victimized.
Probably feels
by.
Justified. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and on that note, like scamming corporations doesn't really feel that terrible. Like we have a friend who ran like a little bit of a con on Starbucks that got I think between $800 and $1,200 of free items. But Starbucks is okay. You know, like Starbucks didn't lose his children.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, and it's like, yeah, totally. Like, I mean, that's a scam.
Mm-hmm.
But like, Yeah. That person that we know did that very successfully. And it's also, like, I mean, on, like, even on, like, a kind of, like lesser scale, it's, like, I remember a person I knew in college who was, like, such a shoplifter. It was, like, almost kleptomania.
Oh, yeah.
And he was always, like, yeah, but I'll never steal from a local business. But, like, chains, like, fuck it.
A thief with ethics. I don't know, but, like, stealing from Target's, like, kind of fine.
But is it? Is stealing from anywhere kind of fine?
I don't know. Because now I'm getting in my head about, like, the karmic energies that you're putting out.
Well, first of all, I don't think stealing is good. But as someone who helped manage many of the retail store, you know the people who really suffer emotionally when they deal with shoplifting are just, like, the people out there making a buck trying to manage the store. The staff. That's whose headache it is. And the people who are, like, really rolling in that, like, good corporate money don't even really, like, it's not even something they're really thinking about. It's just a percentage on a spreadsheet. But I will tell you, the worst part of retail for me emotionally was dealing with shoplifting.
I could see that. That would be really
hard. It makes your
heart
hurt. It's not fun. Yeah. It's awful. So just know that, like, the people who suffer are the people who are just like you, just, like, working in a fucking store. So.
No. You're right.
I just would always perpetually advocate against shoplifting. It's not good.
No, it's not. And I have long since put that to bed. I'd want you to be good. Assured of that.
Don't start, kids.
But I also, like, in reference to my story, like, struggle with, like, I know that I said a minute ago that, like, con artists are just bad people, since there's not, like, necessarily a ton of reasons other than, like, opportunity and background or personality that would make you a con artist.
Sure.
But I want to acknowledge that about 3/4 of the way through my story, I said that my attitude towards Jewel shifted a little bit. And I do truly think that, like, she was a very vulnerable, very young person who met a con artist, and he took over her life. I didn't mention this, but, like, she lived with him at one point when she was, like, transitioning from, like, foster care to, like, being an adult. And so that puts, like, weird stuff on their relationship. But yeah. I guess even though what she was doing was bad, it was, like, kind of ingrained in her. Like, he had taught her, it felt like he had taught her how to be like this. It was so strange.
I mean, I stand by the belief when I was, like, he was her pimp. Like, it feels that way.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And so that takes some of the onus off of her, but it also makes me think about multi-level marketing scams, because you have, like, the ignorant people who are buying in at the bottom level and potentially losing everything, but in order to not lose everything in an MLM situation, you are required to scam other people. And so, like, you are initially a victim that, like, is taught the system and then victimizes others. And I feel like that's what I witnessed as well, even though, like, what I was in wasn't multi-level marketing, but there were definitely, like, tiers of con artistry that were happening.
I mean, I think that's something, though, that is this really maybe stems from a very toxic viewpoint that a lot of people have, even outside of that, you know, if I don't take this from somebody else, they're going to take it from me.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get to that mindset from better ways and worse ways. You know, you can be really victimized into that mindset. Mm-hmm. You can get there truly from just, like, pure hate, however it comes. And it's fucked up, but I think, you know, a lot of people kind of feel like, well, better them than me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that Jewel was a person who had seemingly, like, been victimized a lot of times in her life and maybe was, like, a little desensitized to the concept of using people. Or maybe, like, your friend who was like, I don't steal from small businesses, I steal from corporations. Like, maybe there was some kind of, like, Robin Hood element to the way that she conned people, like the stolen credit card that she had. Like, I hope that was a very wealthy person, and I feel like, based on knowing her a little bit, she would have had, like, a shred of morality about it like that. Like, I don't think she would have taken a broke person's credit card, because she knows what it's like to be broke. So I feel like...
But also, like, if somebody's broke and you have that credit card, they're probably noticing what's going on and calling it off sooner, that is, you know?
A very good point. That's a very,
yeah,
very
that's
good
just
point.
Logistics also.
Yeah, also that. I don't know, but I'm trying to be soft about it, and I've never tried to, like, have compassion for her in my memory because I've just been, like, so irritated about it. But in hindsight, and after telling you that, I'm like, wow, you were truly conned into this lifestyle as well.
I mean, that's true. Like, I mean, without knowing her, with this limited knowledge that I've received, like, yeah, I mean, I think she was. That doesn't, that also doesn't make,
doesn't make it okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super not okay still. Super, super not okay. But if you are interested in learning more about con artistry, I would highly recommend hopping on the Wikipedia page for types of cons. And they have like 40 different con games laid out on there, like blueprints for cons that people run.
Wow.
Yeah, because they're so orchestrated. Like they're all broken into types. Like there are get rich quick schemes involving things like the money box scheme or Spanish prisoner, then like persuasion tricks, gold brick scams, extortion, all different gambling tricks. It's a fun read. I would highly recommend looking through some of those. Go ahead.
The most memorable, you're naming so many things that I'm like, I don't know what any of these are.
Like, I know. I don't. Yeah. And they're like the grandparent scam. That one's self-explanatory. We talked about that at the beginning of the episode.
Sure.
Turk, or I don't know if they're Turkish scams, or I think it's just called a Turk scam.
Okay.
Is like a kind of scam that could be applied to any other scam. But it's basically when everyone involved, except for the mark, is like a con artist player in the game. So like if you went in to like apply for a mortgage and like it was a Turk con going on, everyone in the bank would be in on it and would be like, someone would like cross your path and say something that like planted the seed of an idea that like maybe you should take out a second mortgage later today, and then like that person would be involved, and then the people you meet at the bank would be involved. And it's kind of like a Truman Show situation where the mark is completely encircled by people who are manipulating the situation.
Oh, it's kind of like that. It almost makes me think about, you know, those scams, like, and it's like a, like it's a scam, but you know, you hear about this where people in cars will like have someone like encroach on you in their car in a way, and like somebody will like ride your side, and then someone will slam on the brakes, and you're gonna hit one of them.
Oh,
and it's gonna
yeah.
be your fault,
right?
And like that's, and but both cars are in it together.
Exactly. Yes, that is what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah. Oh man.
There's a TV show on Bravo that is scripted, which is unusual for Bravo, called Imposters, and I will tell you, it's just okay, but it is about a group of people who are constantly involved in scam or being con artists. And so like there are three main characters who like every 6 months like get a packet of instructions for like what new con they're going to run, and they all have a role that they have to play. And it's like months of like back work, and like at one point, or at many points actually, like people get married to the con artists, and then like it's a whole problem. But
wow.
If you're interested in a fully immersive con artist situation, check out Imposters. But then it's hard because they don't have regular lives and they don't know who they are because they're always just playing these cons.
I mean, truly, like any good topic, there is an episode of Criminal Minds about this.
Of course.
I mean, my passion. Listen. But the there's a guy who's like a con artist. He's conning people. He's conning the rich. And he is very much like married with kids. His wife has no idea what's going on. He is like conning these women, but also like kind of seducing them and sleeping with people and like wooing them. And he, like, a big part of it though is like he's like kind of having a psychotic break, and he is so entrenched in the con, and then also like this other life, like very attached to his like young son. But, like, he is, like, losing his identity. And it's, like, it like truly is, like, a descent into madness because he hits a point that he's having trouble keeping it straight and not in a logistical way. Mm-hmm. Like, not in a, like, oh, shit, I forgot to put my wedding ring back on. Like,
oopsies. No, but, like, his reality is altered.
It is in this episode, which, I mean, television, fictional, love Criminal Minds. But
anytime you try to juggle a lie, sometimes you get confused about your own reality.
I mean, it's what people say. Tell the truth. It's easier to remember.
It is indeed. Well, and probably if you're, like, knees deep in a con, you would have to start internalizing some of that behavior. Like, the characters in that show, like, often talk about, like, how it's difficult because you adopt, like, semi-permanently, like, personality traits of someone who is not you. And so then, like, when you're finished with, like, that round of, like, the game or, like, the con, then, like, who are you? Because you haven't, like, given any thought or time to, like, who you actually are or what you actually like, because you've been playing a role 24/7.
Yeah.
That would suck. I feel that way sometimes about being closeted, you know? Sometimes there were times where I was like, wait, am I straight? And I'm like, oh, no. No. No, I'm not.
Well, that's real, though. It is. Like, I think, like, when we try all sorts of things on First Size, it's whatever it is, you know, be it a social group or, like, an emotional state or hiding a part of our identity, it can make us struggle with who are we or what's real and what's not.
Of course. Yeah.
God, did we just have a lot of empathy for con artists?
We did. And I just accidentally identified with them pretty hard because I don't feel like I'm always transparent with people in my life. And that's making me feel like a con, but that's okay.
You know what? I mean, we're all a work in progress. Maybe just a reminder to, I don't know, for all of us to try and be less of a scammer.
Yeah.
Or scamming people emotionally or trying to take your money.
Yeah. You know what? I'll try to be less of a scammer this month. That will be a goal. You too. You try.
I'm always trying.
I know. But in true Why Are You Like This fashion, we, of course, have to wrap up with a verbal game.
Ugh, we always do. It's what we do.
Cue the vibraphone.
Oh, cue it.
So this is pretty straightforward, but basically I want to ask you if you, in these situations, if you would rather con or be conned. Would you feel better?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I love this. I'm so invested already. I'm excited.
So it's just an insurance fraud situation similar to what you described where, like, people are not emotionally invested in this. So you're not, like hurting someone's
heart.
I'm
just selling them fake insurance if I'm the con artist. I'm not, like, fucking their wife and, like, doing weird things.
You're not tricking them into falling in love with you. Like, it's not that.
Okay. Yeah, I feel fine. Okay, let's
go. So in an insurance fraud scam, for $100,000, let's say, would you rather be the con or the mark?
I mean, I don't have $100,000 to give, guys.
I don't either.
I mean, I just like, the things that enter my mind on this initially are, I'm like, how would I financially recover? Or, like, what would happen? I'm like, how would that even work? If I were conned, and then I'm like, that would be, like, serious, like, trouble, jail time things if I got caught. Like, am I getting caught?
No, you just have
guilt.
But also,
like, could I sleep at night?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think if it were someone, like, incredibly wealthy, I'm talking, like, top 5%, you know, like, kind of folks, I would rather be the con artist. If it were, like, even upper middle class people, I think I'd rather get conned.
Me too. I agree 100%.
And that's shitty. It shouldn't be relative that way, but I guess it is, because I'm like,
no, the detriment is relative to the
wealth.
Yeah,
it is.
It depends on how much does $100,000 hurt you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what if it was like a $25 kind of, like, sleight of hand?
If it were Trump, I'd do it twice. I'd be like,
well, that's,
listen,
do it 500 times. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
1 millionth time.
I don't know if he has that to give. We haven't seen the tax returns. Anyway.
Yeah, and we won't. But what if it was like a $25 sleight of hand trick? Would you rather be on the grifter end or the mark end for that?
oh, I would want to be on the grifter, because like, how cool would it be if I was like that good at sleight of hand?
It would be amazing. I would love it.
I would love to be that good. I love magic, first of all. Like, don't get me started. One of my like best girls in Chicago, her husband is like does sleight of hand, and I'm obsessed with it, and it's like my dream every time I see him for like a deck of cards to appear, and when it does, I'm like never more thrilled. I wish I had that skill set. I think it is so cool. I would love to be able to do that. And I am not stressed about taking $25 from someone.
I'm not either. And if there's like some kind of a trick that goes along with it with like a semi-willing participant, it almost feels fair.
Almost. Honestly. I don't know. I would like sleight of hand somebody's wallet, but then like buy their bar tab. I don't know. I'd be into that. Like,
take the cash, return the ID and the credit cards.
Yeah, you know.
I
like,
do.
Just like
I do.
I'm open to that. I don't know.
I'm open to it too. I'm open to, yeah, cons on the street. I'm open to maybe like a little fraudulent fortune telling. I don't know. I don't have the balls to do it with confidence, I don't think, but I wish I did.
I mean, is fortune telling a con, like, if the participant is willing?
Exactly. That's why I'm saying, like, the sleight of hand stuff, the fortune telling stuff, like...
Fortune telling even feels more, like, on the up and up to me than...
Right. You're stealing still someone's wallet. Spending time with them that you're being paid for. And you are still trying to get a read on them.
I would love to be that good at sleight of hand. It would just be amazing.
This could be a new hobby for you.
I know. I don't need any more hobbies. You know how I am.
There are quite a few.
There are too many.
too many. But we would love to hear about times that perhaps you were conned, or maybe like you ran a small con that we could share with other listeners. We won't name drop you, but like, I'm very interested in the clever things that you've done for money that are maybe not on the up and up, and also how you felt about it, or if people have taken advantage of you and you're feeling some kind of way about that. You should get at us. And how can they do that?
As always, you can get at us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, or on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And thanks for hanging. And
thank you.
Truly, like, don't get conned.
Don't. But do, if you enjoy this podcast, and you probably do if you're this far into the episode, go ahead and tap a 5-star rating on us. We would really love and appreciate that. Or maybe even leave a review if you want us to feel so warm, fuzzy, sensual about you.
Warm and fuzzy. Listen, rate, review, subscribe, don't get conned, and don't get caught.
Good night.
Bye. Mm-hmm.